I'm Austin bound, get my feelings checked at the door.
That's right. Texas has its own community-run Linux Fest on April 10th, 2010 in Austin, Texas. Go to texaslinuxfest.org for details. And remember, get your Linux on.
I'm Austin bound, get my eyes set on the price. The time is now.
Psst, psst, oi, over here. You want to buy this? It's the center of the open source universe. I picked it up last year in Wolverhampton. Only one careful owner, it's a bargain. Oi, oi, come back. Oh. I'm going to have to find something to do with this. Hold on a minute. Yes, that's right. On the 1st and 2nd of May this year, Liverpool is the only place to be for anyone interested in free software, free culture, and free thinking. It's the second live OggCamp event, organised by Linux Outlaws and the Ubuntu UK podcast. We've taken the mantle from Lug Radio Live and we're not giving it back. The 1st and 2nd of May 2010 at the Blackie, Liverpool. Visit ogcamp.org for more details. Also join us on Friday, April 30th for a special free culture gig. Kick off the weekend in style with some great live music. But you might want to leave your hubcaps at home.
Join us for the 2010 Southeast Linux Fest as we once again celebrate Linux and open source software in the GNU/South. Due to the overwhelming response last year, this year's event will be bigger, better, and longer. SELF 2010 will take place Friday, June 11th through Sunday, June 13th at the Spartanburg Marriott at Renaissance Park in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Be there for UbuCon, Fedora Activity Day, BSDA certification, Drupal Camp, multiple parties featuring Dual Core as well as the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 as Riff Tracks, and an even more expansive group of superb speakers, sponsors, and exhibitors. SELF is free to attend, but hurry and register today to lock in the special discount room rate at the hotel. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat DeVille. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How you doing, Pat?
And you're in the studio for two episodes in a row.
Hey, how about that, huh?
Living large.
No snow out there anymore, but we're getting blasted with rain this weekend. So.
That's okay. I'll take the rain any day.
Yeah.
I'm sick of the snow.
Are they still asking for 6 inches of rain? That's what they were saying the other day. It could potentially get up that high.
Well, it's the same kind of those winter storms that we had. It's the same deal as the nor'easter where you get these storms coming up the coast, and as it gets to the colder areas,
park themselves there.
They just get dumped on. Yep. Like the last snowfall we had, we got like 18 inches.
And yeah. It was wicked.
It came back like it whipped the run.
And we got that a few times. We got that a few times this winter.
Philly got it bad.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And Long Island, they got it bad too.
Yeah, we kind of sit right in the middle there, and we kind of lucked out on some of that.
Yeah, we
didn't get it quite
as bad.
We skated
on a couple of them, but the last one we got nailed.
Yeah.
We were dill, but that's okay. So what's doing exciting, Dan? Anything?
Not a whole lot.
You been getting into the Android too?
Yep. I got
my
wife.
You drink the Kool-Aid?
Yep. I got my wife the backflip. It's a neat little phone. It's got a nice flip around keyboard and whatnot. And I'm not particularly fond of the blur interface, the Moto blur interface, but
me either.
Yeah, and I like the just regular the stock interface. Although I do see that HTC is trying to put something. What are they calling it? Like some like Insight or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah,
they're
going to put their own kind of spin on that as well. So hopefully it doesn't stray too much from the native interface. But
yeah, I went out and Apple had the lawsuit. They announced the lawsuit against HTC on alleged 20 patent infringements.
They're bullshit.
And I was looking to upgrade by G1, and I looked at the Droid. I know plenty of people that have the Droid. The Droid's a great phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty powerful. It's got a lot of functionality. I like the keyboard on it. But the thing that was holding me back about it was I would have to switch back to Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently on T-Mobile, and I like it. I'm only paying about $60 a month, and I'm not on a contract.
Right.
So I can, like, walk at any time. So I kind of wanted to stay there. And I've talked to people who had the Droid, and they were paying more money. They were paying, like, $70-$80 for it,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of steep.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on a budget. You know, my wife doesn't work, so, you know, trying to keep things manageable, you know, the expenses. And an extra $20 a month, it adds up after, you know, once a year or whatever.
Well, they hit us for a $30 data plan for this.
Yeah, all the smartphone carriers, what they do is they make you get a data plan. Mm-hmm. It's like $30. And
so now I have to look and see, because I think I can get the data plan. Mine's the primary number on the account, and I think I can get the data plan and then just do like a $10 like family data plan. It's supposedly supposed to give you unlimited data for the whole family. So I don't know. I'll have to look into that then at some point.
I've used all the different carriers. I've been on Verizon. I've been on AT&T. This time around when I got the G1 last year, it was I switched to T-Mobile, and that was my first experience with them. And to be honest, I've been pretty happy with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot with these cell phone carriers, it's very specific to your local area. Yeah. Some people love it. Some people hate it. It all depends where you're at and how the connectivity is and what kind of towers they got in the area and what the network infrastructure is like to really affect where you're at. Plus, you know, if you're in bigger areas, you get more people on the network. Mm-hmm. Like AT&T is atrocious if you go to certain cities like San Francisco or New York, forget it.
Right, yeah.
But if you go out to like more, you know, not as congested, it's supposedly pretty good.
I don't have any issues going to New York with AT&T because I go up there for business, you know, quite a bit. But I don't tend to have any issues. Although I do see that my battery drains a lot more when I go into New York for some reason. So
probably all the GPS stuff that's going on. Yeah. You know, you know, the stuff's running background. So I wound up getting a Nexus One and it's outstanding, man. It's a freaking phone.
Yeah, we were looking at it just a little bit ago.
It's so fast.
It's a slick phone. Yeah,
it's got a 1 gigahertz Snapdragon processor.
Mm-hmm.
The display is 800 by 480, which is a little less than what the Droid has. The Droid is 854
mm-hmm.
by 480.
Right.
And they're both comparable. So the whole point of this episode is we're going to concentrate on re-encoding your Myth TV recordings to handheld devices. Now, prior to me getting into Android stuff, I have a Nokia N800, and so do you.
Yep, I have a Nokia
N800. And the Nokia N800 was a great device.
Yep.
You know, nice, beautiful display. It was an internet tablet. Really didn't have any phone functionality. It was more of like a web device.
Mm-hmm.
But you could watch plenty of videos on it.
Oh, sure.
And it could do, the N800, you could do MPEG-4 stuff, and you could also do AVIs as well. And it was a little more flexible as far as like the, comparing it to maybe the iPod stuff or the Android phones.
Right.
See, the Android stuff has they have an X264 decoder on there so that it plays back all the X264 videos,
mm-hmm.
you know, pretty seamless. That's why the G1, which is the, you know, the original Android phone, it can do YouTube videos no problem.
Right.
You know, because they're all the YouTube stuff's encoded in X264, but you can't play any other formats video wise.
Right.
Audios, it's good, you know, AUG, you know, MP3, FLAC, mm-hmm. whatever, Windows Media, it'll play it back. But the Nexus One is, it's outstanding. It's so fast. So what I did was, I took a friend, Pat Archibald. He had a script that he was doing with FFmpeg to re-encode his videos, and he was doing a one pass, and I took a look at his script. I encoded some videos with it. And I wasn't 100% satisfied with the quality that he had. I thought it was a little blurry and there was a lot of pixelation and stuff. So I looked at his stuff, and then I also looked at Aaron Newcomb's, our friend from The Source.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some stuff about encoding videos for Android devices. So between the two of them, and I also looked at some of the FFmpeg manual, I kind of came up with a new command line. It's multiple lines depending on how wide you spread it out, but it's really one one command just stretched out. And I'm doing a two-pass encoding. The reason for two-pass encoding with FFmpeg is the first time you do it around when you set two-pass is it'll create a log file, and in this log file it'll show like as it's going through the video frame by frame, it kind of like maps it out and keeps like a record of how you know the specifics and how to encode each frame. And what I have in my line is I have the first time around, I have it going to dev null, so it's not really putting it out to a file. The only thing that we're really generating with the first pass is the log file. So that's like our roadmap for the second pass. And then the second pass comes around and looks at the log of the first pass, and then that's when it's doing the encoding. And it's much more smoother at this point. Now, FFmpeg, it's really like a Swiss Army knife of you know, free and open source software for multimedia. It can take almost any video format and re-encode it to any other format. It takes you can use multiple encoders. You can use MPEG-4. You can use X264. I went with Live X264, and the results were pretty damn outstanding. I did a bunch of tests with some high def video and some standard def recordings that I had. My high def stuff, I took recordings made with the PVR 1212. So, you know, with the PVR 1212, an average of, you know, 1 hour video is like 4 gig plus, 4.1, 4.3 range for your recordings. So I tried three different settings, quality settings. The differences between the three that I tried was the video rate. The lower rate, which is what Pat Archibald had, he had it at 480K with a frames per second rate of 13 frames per second, which sounds kind of low, but honestly, when you watch a Blu-ray DVD, it's going at 25 frames per second.
Right.
So 13, if there's not a lot of movement, you really don't notice anything. It's only when there's like a lot of movement, and you might get a little choppy here and there. Mm-hmm. But it's you're looking at it on a small device, so it's manageable. So my lower setting, I went with 480K like Pat Archibald's line that he had. And I added a couple extra parameters. One of the other things was I'm using the different video code. I'm using LiveX264. He was using the older MPEG-4, which was the predecessor to X264 codec. And the difference between the two is the X264, the files are a lot smaller. So that 4.3 gig video that I had, HD, when I was using with the 480K setting and the 13 frames per second, with X264, it was like 300 and something meg, you know, and I showed you what it looked like on the phone. It looks really good.
Oh, it does. It plays really, really nice.
It was like an episode of Caprica, and I had some Bourdain and a couple other shows on there. Mm-hmm. I also tried encoding some of my recordings from my HD home run, and those look really good too. Mm-hmm. And then I also tried some standard def recordings that I had done with the PVR 1212, a couple Doctor Who episodes, and they look real good too. So I'm really happy with the results that I got with FFmpeg.
How long does it take when you've been seeing to transcode one file down, one of these large, you know, 4.3 gigabyte files? How long do you see it taking?
Maybe an hour.
An hour?
Yeah.
That's both passes?
Yeah.
Does the first pass go through like quick, just kind of like a scan, and or is it roughly about the same?
It's about the same.
Same for each pass?
It's about the same. I don't sit here the whole time, but it's an hour.
Yeah.
You know, so I tried a couple other setups. I tried it with a little bit of higher. I tried it at 768K, and I also tried it at 1000K with... what's interesting, it doesn't seem to get... You know, you have the parameter dash R, which is your frames per second. When I did it with the lower setting, it did it at that rate, 13 frames per second. When I tried the upper ones, I tried it at 25 and 50 just to see if I can do it. When I did it with 25, I think it kicked back to maybe 14 frames per second. And then when I did 1000K, I put 50 frames per second. I think it went up to maybe 25. Mm-hmm. So I need to investigate that a little bit to see why I wasn't getting the higher frame rates that I had set. Maybe there's a high end, maybe there's a ceiling, depending upon your video rate.
Right.
So I need to investigate that a little better. But anyway, the short story is I have it on the forum. I have three sets of FFmpegs that you can use. They all work. I'm really happiest with the first one at the lowest setting. I think you get a nice cross between a small file, good video quality, fairly high audio quality. I think it looks good. For the audio, I'm using the LiveFAC encoder for the audio, and it does ACCC. Mm-hmm. AAC. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty happy with that.
Have you tried putting that to like OGG, Vorbis, or?
You don't want to do that. I don't think you want to do that. It's supposedly you can do an MP3, but I'm most happiest with the LiveFAC.
Right.
It's between the three. And now other people have used other software. I know I was talking to Alan and Lincoln, those guys. Those guys have the Droid, the Verizon Droid, otherwise known as the Milestone in Europe.
Yeah.
And they were using an application called Handbrake GTK, which is a great application for ripping DVDs and re-encoding it to different formats and different size files and different quality settings. Yep. That's a nice application.
Oh, I've been using it. I've ripped all my whole DVD collection to my MythBox. So
did you really?
Yeah.
What codec did you wind up using?
MPEG-4. You know, using, well, I was using the X8. I'm saying it wrong. It's H.264. It's X.
Well, H.264 is the format.
Yeah.
But the encoder is X.264.
That's what I was using.
I think that's what it is.
I'm getting them mixed up in my head there, but. But no, all MPEG-4, you know, with five.
Well, MPEG-4 is just a container. It's like AVI.
Yeah. H.264.
When we talk about video re-encoding files, there's a concept you have to get down.
Yeah.
There's a container, and then there's the actual encoder that you use in the format.
Right.
And a container could be something like an MP4.
Yeah.
It could be
container
an AVI.
Container was MP4.
And the encoder.
The encoder was the X.264.
Right. You can use the X.264 encoder. You can use the MPEG-4 encoder.
And I did with an AC2 pass through. I set it up so that it just passed through right to the receiver, all 5.1 surround. It worked really, really nice. So the whole collection is just sitting right in there. You can just zip through that nice little interface that they now have in Mythbuntu with the last release for all the videos. They're all stored on the back end in a video storage group, and they're just divvied out to all the.
What resolution did you do them in?
I just left them at whatever it saw as the resolution.
720x480, which is regular standard def.
Well, it changed based upon some of the older DVDs and whatnot, right? But so I let it pick whatever the native resolution on the disc was. So if it was a 4x3, it's going to come up as a 4x3, you know, ratio. If it was a 720 or whatever, it would just pick whatever the native one was, and it just plays perfectly in whatever format it happens to be, whichever the DVD happens to be recorded in. So
that's cool. I've done some ripping in the past, and I've encoded, like, I know when I was doing Nova Export, you know, the last time around, maybe a year ago, I was doing a lot with Xvid and DivX. And I don't know. I'm kind of sold on the X.264.
Mm-hmm.
Now H.264 is patent encumbered.
Right.
Okay. So that's the limitation of that. Now
that's if you're distributing it, though. I mean, yeah, we're not distributing it.
Yeah, if it's just personal use, you don't have to pay any fees or anything. You know, I know some people, you know, they're picky about that, and that's something to think about.
Yeah.
But honestly, when you're doing like X.264 encoding with using that encoder, the results are very good.
Yep.
You get really small files, very good quality, just really, just a nice mix of file size versus video quality.
Yep.
So much better than MPEG-4. Like when I did some tests with the MPEG-4 encoder using FFmpeg, and my files were like huge in comparison.
Mm-hmm.
I think a couple times I even got the version that I encoded for the Android for my Nexus. I think it was bigger than the original.
Right, yeah.
You know, so it's not being very economical.
Yeah.
So
I let these go at a pretty high quality too. So I just they're about a gigabyte, maybe.
That's
1.2 gigabytes.
When I do a rip,
and
I want to store it on my server. Yeah. That's what I try to do it around a gig size.
Yeah.
For
I mean, ideally, I wanted to take an ISO and just rip the ISO. And let it, so you could have the full native DVD interface and whatnot, but the storage groups at that point weren't supporting the ISO. Supposedly in 23 that it should all be fixed, but I haven't checked on it lately to see what the status of that is.
Yeah, so Handbrake is a great app. I've used that before. It's got a nice GUI. Now, the thing about Handbrake, it's split into a command line piece, and then there's the GUI piece.
Yep.
You could install the command line piece on your MythBox and then have a script set up where you're calling to it.
Yep.
Now, I did some testing also with the GTK Handbrake on the command line. Alan Metzler from the Tech Show, he gave me a script that he had put together, and it worked. You know, it's probably using the same thing that the FFmpeg is doing. It's just used, you know, it's using wrappers and and parameters.
I think there's a dependency on FFmpeg, so I think it's using
probably.
It in some.
Everything uses FFmpeg, man. Everything.
They call it the Swiss Army knife for
Myth
a reason.
Uses it heavily.
Oh yeah,
you know, all the transcoding and stuff. I think it uses FFmpeg.
Yep.
So it really is really important. Now we talked about Handbrake. That's a very good application. There's a couple other applications that are out there that aren't specific to Android, but they're more same kind of deal as Handbrake. The idea is to take them and to do a re-encode. And the two that I'm aware is this one called Transmegadon. I think it's Christian Schaller, who used to work for Fluendo. He did that, and it relies heavily on GStreamer. And it's a nice interface. I think it's Python based, if I'm not mistaken. And it's the same kind of deal. You have a screen, you know, you point to your file. You know, there's some pre-built presets in there. It's specifically for N800, Nokia N800. There's a whole bunch of iPod stuff. There wasn't anything in Android yet, but that might have changed in a later version. I haven't looked at it.
And you can always add profiles to that, right?
Yeah, you can go in and add a profile and actually email to him, and he'll add them in there. So check out Transmegadon. It is in the Ubuntu PPAs, I believe. And I've played around with that, and that's actually a pretty nice program, and it works as well. The thing with that is it's a GUI program, so using it within Myth is probably not really that great.
Right.
But if you have, you know, your recordings, you know, you share it out to one of the other machines on your network, you can have this sitting on your workstation or your laptop or something, point it to your, you know, your Myth directory and where your recordings are, and go to town. And then there's another one called Arista, which is also GStreamer based. And that looks like a pretty nice one too. And it's very similar. And I believe these guys were working independently. I don't think they're collaborating at all. But I do think they do communicate with each other just to bang ideas off each other and just to see what, you know, how they're approaching it. They're both GStreamer based. So they're very similar in their approach and what they're using in the background. So I think also Arista Transcoder is also in the Ubuntu PPAs. So, you know, check out both of those if you're looking to do some re-encoding for different devices. I know a lot of people have iPods and what are some of the other popular devices? Arcos.
Mm-hmm. Arcos has some Android-based handsets coming out.
The newer ones, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The older ones, I don't know what they were running on there. I think it was.
But still, I believe they support like every format under the sun.
Yeah,
so.
They do.
So you should be able to get away with an H.264 encoding for those as well.
Yeah. So those are the results for encoding. So what I suggest you guys do, I had a blog post about it today, which is Friday, March 12th. And if you go to my blog, you could see it. And I also in the our forum at the linuxlink.net. If you go into the MITVcast forum, there's a thread in here called MITV Handbrake and Android Conversions. Where the original the guy who started it wanted to talk about Handbrake, and I jumped in with FFmpeg because it was Android specific and basically doing the same thing.
Right.
So I guess what we're planning to do is Myth Export, which is written by John Babb, who we've spoken to. Well, no, nobody here heard it, but we spoke
to him.
we've spoken to John a few times, and he's the guy who wrote Myth Export. Myth Export's really nice.
Yep.
What it is, it's a separate plugin from MITV. It runs on the web server, and you can go in into your menus. There's a whole bunch of presets for all the different re-encodings that you might want to do.
Right.
Similar to some of these other applications that we've discussed.
As well as create your own.
Right, right. And he's open to people going in and giving them, you know, some profiles. And
He moved the wiki page off of the Ubuntu community wiki
it's
area.
It's on Mythbuntu now,
It's
right?
now on Mythbuntu specifically. So if you're looking for the wiki page for it, it's out there.
Yeah, Myth Export. Mm-hmm. And he was on Identica today, and he was saying he was getting a Droid too. So he's probably interested in doing this. Mm. Now, my settings on my FFmpeg, it's set for 800 by 480, which is what the Nexus One does. The Droid does 854 by 480. I took the same exact videos that I encoded, okay, my test videos, 3-4 that I had. I took one of my coworkers as a Droid, and I put my SD card in there with my videos. Everything played, no problems whatsoever, and they look good also on the Droid/Milestone.
Now, the backflip is 320 by 480,
right.
So I'm going to take basically the same line there. I don't know. I may or not drop the bitrate down a little because we saw that it was chugging a little bit even on just one of those Sega Genesis ROMs.
Yeah, so I may, but that's different. That's game emulation.
That's true. Yeah. So I don't know. I'll try it out and see. We tried a standard def one that you had here, one of your kids' shows, and that was played fine. There was
right.
No
what
issue
it was is the older devices, as well as the Nokia N800. I think they're 320x480. I'm sorry. They're
yeah. I think they were
320x480.
Yeah.
Which is the older Android devices like the G1, the MyTouch 3G, as well as some of the lowest spec ones like the HTC Hero, the Iris. And also the backflip, the Motorola backflip. They're at 320x480. So if you take the 320x480 and replace where I have 800x480, they should encode and play fine.
Yep.
Now, that's the same resolution as the old N800 and A10 devices. And I had some videos, MPEG-4s that I had on there. Mm-hmm. I threw them on your phone.
Yeah.
And they play back fine.
Right.
So you should be good if you go with the 480K setting, my lowest setting, and just drop the resolution down.
Yep.
They should play fine.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. I'm gonna actually get the Myth export lines work and try and get that, you know, so that it's just real easy, either right from the interface or right from the web interface, and fire them off and attach it to an RSS reader so they can pull them down.
Yeah, I emailed John and I gave him my lines here. One thing that I noticed was one of the flags that I didn't have in there originally was AC2, which basically will take your audio streams and if you have more than two channels stereo, it'll mix them down. So if you have 5.1, it'll push them down to 2. These phones, I don't think there's any device, portable device that could do 5.1 audio. So my recordings that I did from the HD Home Run was in 5.1.
Mm-hmm.
Now the PVR 1212, if you do the optical audio, it'll do 5.1.
Yeah. Mine does. I get 5.1 right now out of it.
Through the optical?
No, not through the optical.
Really?
Right through the component, yeah.
Hmm.
I don't have any issue. It pipes over to my...
You got the RCAs or you got your optical for your audio? It's separate.
No, I don't have the... It's just the GAN cable.
Okay, you're using that then.
But it
does the 5.1.
I get the 5.1 out of it. So I have optical outgoing to my receiver.
Right.
So it's just passing that through the AC pass-through. So... And the DTS pass through and all that stuff. So whether or not it's anything is broadcasting that or not, which I'm not sure how much is other than just 5.1 surround that RCN is broadcasting.
Yeah, the cable companies and satellites, they don't do more than 5.1.
Yeah.
Now if you go into like Blu-ray, there's all these newer audio specifications.
Yeah, right. Right.
They're doing 7.1, and there's a couple other ones too.
Right. No, I get full surround sound right over the components. Right. So, but you're not running through a receiver up there, right?
Not upstairs, though. Yeah. No.
Down here, is there?
Yeah.
Is there?
Yeah. Yeah, I took my receiver up from up here down here and moved all the old gears down here now.
That's right.
So I don't have an audio receiver upstairs yet. So that's on the list. So definitely check out my FFmpeg settings. You know, you're going to play around with it with MythExport, and I forwarded it to John Babb. So hopefully between us,
we
can come up with a usable profile.
Right.
It's using MythExport, so if you have an Android phone, you know, you'll be able to use this the setting that we have.
Yep.
It'll be pretty good. Definitely check it out. So, what else we got?
Other big news of the week.
We talked about in the last episode that TiVo was going to rev up their series of devices that they have, and they announced this TiVo Series 4. Now, the thing that jumped out to me about it was that the interfaces are all flash-based.
Yeah.
Now, I looked at some videos and some demos of it, and to be honest, I wasn't all that impressed by the menuing system that they had and the on-screen display.
They're very convoluted. If you want to find something like, say, manage your season passes, you know, you got to go down into some what you wouldn't consider a logical directory structure to get to that season pass manager. You know, they've renamed things and moved things around, and that just it's just not as intuitive as I think they want to make it.
Yeah, I wasn't that impressed by it. Honestly,
no.
I think stuff that's coming out of Boxy and XBMC and even Myth.
Yep.
Is as good, if not better, than what these guys are
doing
in the next series.
I think they even had to put two processors in these new boxes. Just one, basically, I think is going to handle the Flash interface.
Do you know what they're using?
I don't know. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but I think I did hear that they were moving to a multi-processor system versus the single chip in there.
Kind of like a game system.
Yeah, right.
Like a cell processor or
something. Yeah, yeah.
Now, the thing that was interesting was that they're offering two devices. They're offering a lower-end model for $300, which only has like a 350-gig hard drive.
Yeah.
Which is nothing.
Yeah.
And then they're offering the one with 1 terabyte drive at $500.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty steep.
Yep.
It's not cheap.
Plus, then you add on top of it the monthly costs or the extra. What are they even still offering the lifetime subscriptions?
I don't think they're doing lifetime.
They're not doing that.
They let
anymore.
You pay, I think, $100. Up front for a year.
Oh, yeah.
If you'd like to go that route.
But still, you're talking, what, $14-$15 a year, you know?
On top of whatever you're paying for your cable.
A month on top of your cable, yep. It's not the model to go with anymore.
No, it's not.
You know? Considering, did you get the letter from RCN saying that they're going to increase our... It's like everything is going up like $2 or $3 across the board for the different rentals for the boxes.
That's like
just
the
to put the TiVo interface on there. Now, you know, those Motorola boxes aren't going to be powerful enough to handle that Flash interface.
No way, man.
So what kind of interface are we going to get out of that?
Well, the TiVo is going to be only for their DVR model. You know, if you just have a box, you're just going to have the Motorola.
So now they're going to have two separate interfaces for people who, you know, just want to watch TV or whatever.
Yeah, and the DVRs. It's kind of common.
Yeah.
And they still, you notice, they still haven't, RCN still hasn't announced what they're going to charge extra per month for each DVR.
Well, no, that's what that letter was.
How much is it going to be a month?
The DVR boxes, it's going up like an extra $2 a month. So I think it's like $17.99 now.
I said 20.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, so you're right. Yeah.
That's what my guess was 20.
But everything else is also going up too. Like certain premium packages are going up for the lineups and there was a letter we got just a few weeks ago in the mail saying that it was going to be the new pricing structure. And it actually takes place on March 24th. Hey, that's my birthday. So
happy birthday to you, Dan.
So RCN has found a way to screw us yet again.
Yeah,
so,
well,
although, actually, too, the last time we recorded, as we got done, they were pushing updates down, right?
Yeah, it was a Sunday night.
So you now have like Showtime and whatnot for the next like 6 months. Plus they
HBO.
They gave you like a $5 credit or something like that. It was right in the middle of the U.S. Hockey game in the Olympics, you know, and so everybody was like flipping out. Log into the interface if you're in this area. They have like a thing on it that says, "Hey, we apologize." They're sending out a letter too as well.
Basically, what was happening was if you were watching TV, the box would like turn it on and turn off intermittently.
Yeah.
For like 2 hours straight.
You could still watch, but only the channel that was on before the update started. No matter what channel you tried to type in, you couldn't switch it. It would look like it switched it, but it would never switch the video. So
clearly, they weren't thinking about people watching TV on a Sunday night.
No.
Well, what makes no sense is...
Should happen at 4 in the morning.
Exactly.
You know?
I was just going to say that.
You're a programmer.
Exactly.
I'm a programmer. If I need to push an important update out like this, it's when everybody's asleep. So
in the middle of the night, everybody's sleeping. Nobody
California's
notices.
Done for the night, and you know it's after that you're free to go.
3-4 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Yep. Nobody notices.
Yeah.
Clearly, they didn't have their shit together.
Yeah.
But back to the TiVo though, they charge extra for a wireless dongle. It's like $100.
Yeah, $100 for a wireless dongle. Come on, my wireless end router didn't cost $100. You know.
And then they also have a modem. That's sad that people are still on dial for $30. Another dongle for a modem if you need to use that.
So they don't even at least have a modem built in anymore?
No, you have to pay extra.
What the hell? Come on, TiVo.
The positives that looking at it looks nice is this remote that they have.
Yes.
It looks similar. It doesn't look all that different from the Microsoft Philips remote.
Nope.
Okay, but it's black. But what's different is it's got like a slide-out keyboard, kind of like one of these smartphones.
Yep. It's like my backflip here.
That looks slick. That's nice. I like that.
But look, they're now offering like the four colored buttons as well. You know, they still have some of the proprietary ones for like the up and down thumbs up and thumbs down type thing.
I want someone from the Myth Project to hack that remote. I want to use that with my Myth Box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
sure we could get something that could read the IR codes.
Yeah. Definitely, it's doable.
Still, it's another $100 upgrade for this TiVo box that you're going to buy.
Yeah, yeah, it's not cheap. So you're talking $500 for this HD box.
I think you can now. I'm not entirely positive about that. I think you'll be able to stream between boxes as well, and from your to your computer as well, if you want to, with this new TiVo.
It's the TiVo with the functionality they have in it is definitely better than the stupid cable boxes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then the satellite company DVRs. Those things are crap. They're just glorified VCRs.
Yep.
At least TiVo gives you some functionality.
Yeah.
You know, but honestly, what they're charging, I think you're better off doing a myth setup.
Yep.
Now, the thing that did look nice on this, on the software side, is they have a whole bunch of new streaming content over the internet.
Right.
They have a Netflix client, which is nice, because currently there's no Netflix client for Linux users. Interestingly enough, TiVo is a Linux box.
Yeah.
My guess is they did some kind of a licensing deal with Netflix.
Like Roku. Like the Roku box.
Like the Roku, and it's a binary blob, and they just give them enough information in the APIs to be able to get the information to interact with the files, you know, fast-forwarding and, you know.
Yeah, right. Whatnot.
And it's got DRM on it. It also has Amazon Video on Demand, YouTube, Blockbuster. So it looks like they've updated it. I'm sure people will buy it.
Why can't they just provide us with a binary to allow us to do this stuff? Come on. Just let it out there for people. You have to sign into these services anyway and still pay your monthly fee or whatever, you know? It's a whole other revenue stream. People should be looking at that.
Yeah. Listen, you know, I'm a Netflix subscriber. I get the DVDs in the mail and whatnot. I would like to stream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only way I can do it is if I fire up VirtualBox and bring up a Windows virtual machine.
Right.
And do it through that.
That's real convenient on your Myth TV, right?
Yeah, it's not really convenient on Myth TV. I know there's other ways of doing that, too.
Yeah.
They have this software called PlayOn that you have to pay like $30 for. It's Windows software, but I don't want to be bothered with that.
Yeah.
More than likely, what I plan on doing is I'll probably get like a Blu-ray player that does the stream.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
that's what I think I'm going to do as well.
Yeah, there's a couple LG models. The cheapy Blu-rays from Best Buy, their own brand.
Right.
They do the streaming as well. So that's probably what I'm going to... There's also TVs that do it now also.
Yep.
So, you know, you don't need to do it in your DVR software. It would be nice, though. If they offered like a $20 client, I would pay the $20.
Yeah, I would too.
If it was like a one-shot deal.
Yep.
I actually sent Netflix an email and I said, you know, how much would it cost to do licensing to be able to do a Linux client?
For right.
Linux? They never responded.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect them to. Yeah. Linux. We don't support Linux.
Well, Roku boxes.
I know.
TiVo's Linux.
I know. It saw Linux in there, and their Microsoft filter said, hey, we got to dump this right now.
Well, what the issue is that the CEO from Netflix is on the Microsoft board.
Yep,
that's probably the real issue.
I thought I saw that they had a little bit of a blunder this week, saying, you know, at one point they were...
Microsoft?
No, Netflix. They were saying they were going to provide 1080p streaming, and then they went back on it. So I forget where it was, I was looking at
they
that.
They do 720p now.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but I think they said... At one point, yes, this year, by the end of 2010, we're going to be doing 1080p streaming, and then like immediately turned around and said, no, that was wrong. So somehow or another, something's getting kind of crossed there.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? What else on there? Also, there was this other streaming video service called Vudu, V-U-D-U. Mm-hmm.
It was recently bought by Walmart, right?
Walmart.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to work out for them. I mean...
See, the issue that I have with Walmart is that, yes, they provide... like DVDs and CDs and whatnot right there in the
$5
stores.
Bins.
Yeah, but they also restrict it. So if the content is somewhat questionable, they won't sell it. Or if the language in it is bad, you know, they won't sell it right there to you.
No, they won't.
So now that you have this, now that you have Vudu out there doing kind of the same thing, you know, I mean, it's you can watch almost anything that you want on there.
Supposedly,
Walmart owns it, is the content going to be restricted on something like that as well?
Yeah, I don't know if they would do that. It depends on how they run it.
Yeah,
if they just let the people in Vudu run it themselves and it did now just a subsidiary
right
of Walmart, then I could see
them
succeeding possibly because the, you know, the expertise and the infrastructure is all there.
Oh, sure, yeah,
people. But if they get their, you know, too involved and, you know, they'll probably screw it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never used it, but supposedly...
Neither have I.
Yeah, supposedly it was very good quality when I read about it.
It's only just been kind of getting into the news lately, you know, with especially with the buyout from Walmart or whatever. But it's not publicized like something like Hulu is or whatever.
No, well, you know, you need to do PR and you need to get people in there. Mm. I mean, even Amazon Video on Demand. Have you ever used that?
No, I haven't.
I've used it a couple times. They've sent me coupon codes where, you know, they gave me like a free rental. Mm-hmm. I've done that. And I've also purchased, like, when I got the Watchmen DVD, mm-hmm. there was a code in there. Actually, it wasn't a code. When I bought it from Amazon, they sent me an email. They're like, you can watch it streamed from Amazon On Demand.
Oh, yeah?
For 72 hours.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so, like, I actually watched the whole movie before I got the DVD.
Right. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's pretty nice that they did that. I was back in, like, what was that, December, I think? November, December?
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, so that's that. What else do we got? Anything?
I think that was all that we had.
Were you looking?
Oh, the other thing.
Did you upgrade your video card or something?
No, that was a while ago. One other. I did see that Google is starting to get into trying to get into the TV business as well. So
what do you mean?
It's very preliminary at this point, but I think they're going to allow you to try to aggregate everything that you want to watch online somewhere, and then you would basically, I think, be getting all that content straight through Google somehow. But also, they want to be able to integrate it with web content at the same time. So as you have the stream up, supposedly you'll be able to have other information up kind of flying, maybe like alongside of it or whatever. You know, I see that more so for like sporting events and whatnot, but you should be able to kind of go out and make up lists of like the things that you want to watch out there. I don't know how quickly something like this is going to be adopted, or even if it ever will, but it was just recently announced.
Well, someone's got the power to make it happen. Google's
definitely
it.
Yeah.
They got a lot of money. They got deep pockets, that company.
Exactly.
They're definitely venturing out in different directions now.
They are.
They're doing Android. They got all their applications, and they're pushing out.
Yep.
And that would be definitely something to watch in the future.
Oh, I think so. Develops. I think so.
Now, you know, Apple TV, you know, it's very limited what you can do with that. Mm-hmm. You basically purchase videos from iTunes.
Yeah, and watch that's it. That's it.
You know, so, you know, for the longest time, you hear like these rumors that they're going to add capability to do a recording and all this. It never happens.
Nope. And I think that they were talking that a new version of that was supposed to come out with like HDMI support and
right, because they don't have HDMI connections.
They don't.
Why not?
I hear that's all been squashed at this point. So
what's that?
That new version of that Apple TV. I think it's all been squashed at this point. So I could be wrong about that. I don't follow Apple, but I pick up things here.
That is
and there,
like the most moronic thing that they don't put like a standard video connection that anybody could use.
Well, they're putting all this effort into that.
They have like these proprietary connections.
Yeah.
And they sell these dongles that you have to buy.
Yep.
What the frig is that?
It's nickel and diming you. That's what
the
it's
Apple
doing.
Way.
Yeah.
They charge you for everything.
Yep, everything. And then when you need something else to make something else work, right?
Good luck.
Yeah. Ugh.
Stay away from that crap.
Nuts. Yeah.
So I think we're going to wrap it up as a short episode this week.
Yep.
You know, we're getting back into the things, swing of things. And everybody, you know, thanks for listening. If you have some suggestions, some comments, you want to, you know, shoot us an email, by all means do that. I'm Pat at MythTVcast.com.
I'm Dan at MythTVcast.com.
Yep, we're on Twitter, Identica. I'm Pat Davila, D-A-V-I-L-A, on Identica and Twitter.
Yep.
I have my blog. You can also go to the linuxlink.net and see the MythTV guest forum.
One other thing. If anybody has any good ideas for some different content that's out there, like I said, a few weeks ago I set up Miro Bridge, and that's been working really, really good. I'm just looking for some new stuff to throw in there, so shoot me ideas. I'd be interested to check in anything.
MythNet Vision is one I want to check out. How is that coming along? Have you been following that?
No, I haven't gotten back. I haven't had a chance to get back and look at it, but it's something I do want to try out at some point.
Yeah, that looks real promising.
But the Miro Bridge stuff works really, really good. I got a bunch of feeds in there right now. It downloads it every night at like 2 in the morning for me. Works really good. So if you got ideas for other content, just shoot me an email. So
yeah, maybe we can know the how to. So everybody, you know, thanks for listening. A short episode. I apologize for the shortness of it, but we'll be back soon enough. Take care.
See ya. Be free.
they're free. If you want to be free from the dirt and the lumber, come to our side. You won't believe what you see. We got everything you need for your new station. Take it from me with no manipulation. Sign up, no boy, download, enjoy. It's easy to say, we'll come under the roof. All you need is a wealth to break away from the back. You see the light, my friend. Monopoly.